he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday Inflation Nation report and show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. We wish him a happy birthday today.
Thank you very much. Yep.
The cost of your cake went up 10% in the last year.
Yeah, I saw your note this morning on that. Yeah,
flour, sugar, you know.
I guess not only a 7.9%
we'll get into that. We'll get into that. Right now the Dow was down. It was down 400 at one point. So let's say it has improved. It's only down 173 right now. That's about a half a percent, 33,118, after yesterday's big bolt higher, which we'll also talk about here today. S&P is down 33 points, 0.8%, 42.44. NASDAQ taking it on the chin, back to 13,000 area, down 196 after, what, almost a 500-point gain yesterday, which we'll also talk about today. NASDAQ at 13,058. The small caps down 1.1%. Crude oil back up $2.41 per barrel to 111.11. All ones. Gold up $17 after selling off somewhat yesterday. It's back above 2,000. It's at 2,005. Silver's on the move. Silver's up 50 cents to 26.31. And let's see, the interest rates, that should be interesting. 1.98, that's the reaction to the CPI report. And the 10-year is up 3 basis points since that report. And last but not least, Bitcoin getting whacked today, down 2,900 to 39,246. So welcome to the best inverse funds, best oil stocks, best gold stocks,
Fertilizer
stocks.
I've got a fertilizer story that just came across the popped up. Literally, if you look at some of those fertilizer stocks right now, they're already reacting to the news.
You can see, Barry's been sniffing around this morning.
He's
got something. The fertilizer stocks are on fire today after that big sell-off yesterday.
So. Well, and Russia just announced that they're going to, in quotations, temporarily suspend fertilizer exports.
There
you go.
Wow. Okay. All right. We got a lot to talk about today, let me tell you. Yeah. Never a dull moment here on Wall Street these days. Okay, I got to begin, before we start on today, you had this huge jump in the market yesterday. The Dow was up, let me get my numbers up here. The Dow was up 653 points yesterday. The S&P was up 107. The NASDAQ was up 460. That yesterday was a classic example of, you know, if you just look at the indexes, it looked pretty darn good. And you thought, gee, maybe the coast is clear. Maybe I should be getting back into Amazon and Tesla and Apple and all of these, or Amazon and the Teladoc and those. But, you know, I spend my day looking at individual stocks. I'm underneath the surface of the indexes, really looking hard. And what I saw, okay, I want to be in the growth stocks again just as much as anybody does. But I saw nothing that gave me any hope whatsoever for a big rebound, especially in the second tier of the tech stocks. The move yesterday was a garage sale of junk that nobody wants, really. I mean, $3 and $4 stocks were leading the way yesterday. Other than AMD and NVIDIA and maybe just a few others, the rest of the big movers yesterday were junk, okay? Which led me to conclude that probably a lot of short covering. There was hope yesterday that there would be some kind of a deal between Ukraine and Russia. I think, you know, anytime that those rumors surface, Barry, the short, there's heavy short interest in the market, especially in this garbage pile of stocks. I think they went scrambling yesterday to cover their shorts as quickly as they could before they smoked the peace pipe in Ukraine and Russia. But that did not happen. And they met again this morning in Turkey, and they made no progress whatsoever. And in the interim, we get the CPI report. So I give very little, you know, I give very little credence to yesterday's move in the market. Although you thought, gee, man, maybe we're out of the woods here. Maybe we're turning around. I didn't see the quality that needs to accompany a move like that. So take it for what it's worth. That's what I saw. Okay, now I want to talk just real quickly here, or maybe a little bit, about inflation. Barry, that you're taking on the CPI, you're taking the average over the last 12 months. And if you skew it more towards the most recent 6 months, you're looking at 10% inflation. Because look at the monthly figure. 0.08, multiply that by 12, you get 9.6. And most analysts saying there's no way we'll be under 1% next month, which means we're running double-digit inflation right now. That's what it looks like to me.
Oh, yes. And, I mean, we're talking about the hottest number in over 40 years. So, I mean, whichever way you slice and dice it, and you know, your note, I think, hits it, you know, hits the nail on the head in terms of, you know, we're looking at, you know, last month's inflation, right? I mean, to me, given, you know, the Russian-Ukraine, conflict, you know, that number is only going, only going up, at least for a period of time. I don't see how that number is, not hotter, next month, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and I was looking
absolutely.
At some, and you combine that with some consumer spending numbers. I was looking at some of the consumer spending numbers that MasterCard puts out. And they were showing, year over year spending numbers. They actually were also compared it to year over year spending numbers compared to pre-COVID levels. And, the fact is, there's a lot more money out there, right, as we've known through stimulus and everything else. And people are spending more, number one, because prices are higher. But number two, more folks are competing for, the same or less amount of goods, which is also, going to be inflationary. So it's a serious deal. I think they kind of lucked out that the number wasn't, say, 8%. It's kind of the old adage of, buying something for $9.99 is, feels better than, say, $10, right? And coming in at 7.9 instead of an 8 handle, right? I guess that's the only thing that folks could probably potentially feel good about, but it's a hot number, and it's only going to get worse. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to skew it towards the recent months where oil has just taken off, okay? Forget about 12 months ago. I mean, that is way past history now. Forget about 11 months ago. It's an average of the last 12 months. So anyways, I think it's way closer to 10% right now. I see no help, no hope whatsoever out there on the near-term horizon for oil. What hope I did see for fertilizer and food, remember, these are the three biggest inflation items right now, food, energy, and, of course, what we need to grow our food. I see no hope for those prices coming down anytime soon. So now I'm going to throw out one more number out there. The latest consumer sentiment number was 62. That's the lowest we've seen in a long, long time. That means that not only is the supply a problem, which is creating inflation, but now you're starting to see the consumer back off and you're seeing a demand destruction. That is very recessionary in nature.
Yep.
That's not good. I mean, that's a double whammy. This goes back to 1979, which I lived through. Where you had stagflation, it was the Jimmy Carter years, you had roaring inflation, you had slow growth. We have the perfect formula right now for that to occur again. And I saw many people say this morning that a recession is unavoidable now. And I've been showing the, you know, the plunging of the yield curve. Last time, I haven't looked at it today. I'll look at it during the break. It was 20 basis points is all that we were above from inverting. And in fact, if you just look at the probability now of a negative quarter and going into a recession in Q2 of this year, which starts in 21 days, in 3 weeks, 60% chance that we now go into a recession by Q2 of this year. That's just what the market is saying. Now, when we come back, what is this doing to the S&P 500 forecast and earnings estimates that are out there? This is critical. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now show. There goes the 10-year, just crossed over 2%. It's up 6 basis points right now, and that's taking down bond funds with it. There actually is a little bit of a widening in the yield curve right now. Not much. It's 26 basis points now that separates the 2-year from the 10-year. I guess because the long end is going up a little bit today, but the yield curve has come down. When we started the year, we were way up. We had 90 basis points. 2 years ago, we had 150 basis points. We're down to 26, Barry, and falling fast. It has not gone negative yet or inverted, but it looks like it's definitely headed in that direction.
Yeah, and I think it's important to describe what that means, right? So that means you can essentially, if we were to borrow a 2-year note, right? Essentially, for 2 years, let's just say it was, 2%. That means if we wanted to borrow, say, 10 years out, it would only cost us now 2.26%.
Exactly.
Whereas in your example at the beginning of the year, that spread was 0.9%. So it would have been a difference between 2 and 2.9, which is historically still a pretty tight spread if you think about it. You're not being compensated that much more, right, for lending to someone for 10 years than for 2 years, right? So that's where that telling the market's trying to tell you that, you know, interest rates may be cheaper and or not much higher than they are now 10 years from now, which isn't usually a good sign for growth, which is why, in turn, it ends up being recessionary.
Yeah, exactly. And it's inversion of the yield curve has been a pretty good indicator over the year. So you get this big day yesterday in the market. And, you know, I really wanted to look in there and see the quality stocks really bouncing. And I just didn't see it. And at the same time, I saw pullbacks in a lot of the commodity inflationary stocks. And I actually, went in and bought on that pullback for our new clients. And I didn't chase the tech stocks or the financials, which were exploding to the upside. It just looked like short covering to me. And now it looks like that was the case. Okay, so now consumer sentiment 62. That's not good. This is lower than the pandemic low. That's how negative the consumer has become. I think inflation has a lot to do with that. And the ECB is now lowering their global estimates and raising their inflation estimates. Well, it's about time. And at the same time, they kept interest rates at zero. They did not raise, or had that, maybe they're up to 0.25% or something like that. But they didn't do anything other than backing off, which is also inflationary in nature.
Yeah, and they're stuck.
They are really stuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we go from here? Well, I would just say this. Now, as of last Friday, the S&P 500 target price, this is the consensus target price, which always lags because, you know, I don't know how often they update their target prices. It was at $5,300. That's the consensus target price. To get to that, you've got to hit like $260 in earnings next year, and you've got to hit a multiple of about 21. Neither of those are going to happen. This is the biggest warning sign of all. I've said the most reliable indicator is when earnings forecasts begin to shrink. They're going to do that. I was way out in front of it. I started lowering my forecast and my target price about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, something like that. I'm clear down to $4,600 now, and that was before this big inflation print and before oil went to 130 over the weekend. So I got to believe I'm going to be going lower on my forecast this week. So when you start lowering those forecasts, that is not good for the market. Now, having said that, there's going to be some areas of the market that will continue to flourish. But what worked over the last 12 years for the most part, you know, it ended about a year, a little over 14 months ago. Now, let's go to oil for a minute. We looked at this in depth yesterday from all angles, all sides, and we have more today. Now, at the center of this, besides President Biden, is the Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm. She is now appealing to the energy companies to produce as much oil and gas as they possibly can to help meet global demand as a result of the crisis caused by the Russian war in Ukraine. Well, the crisis was in place before the war in Ukraine. This has just thrown more expensive gasoline on the fire. She says, we are on war footing. The Department of Energy and the Biden administration are now ready to work with you. We need oil and gas production to rise to meet current demand. Well, you know, I mean, the oil companies feel like they haven't been dealing with a very friendly environment towards them. And they can't just turn up the spigot because they've backed off of their production levels because of all the red tape and whatnot. It's an uphill climb. You know, we saw what Canada did yesterday. The oil executives respond that a friendlier federal policy is needed, and any significant acceleration of U.S. production growth likely would take as long as a year. Okay, so that is just bullish for oil prices. There's a couple other alternatives here that I'm going to talk about here in a minute. And in the meantime, this unfriendly environment got a little bit more unfriendly as Elizabeth Warren is co-sponsoring a bill on windfall profits tax of the oil companies. Okay, I've seen this play before. Washington prepares a windfall tax for big oil, and she's blaming the problem on the greedy oil executives. So there's another part of this equation out there. And I guess there's now going to be a meeting, U.S. oil executives to meet with Biden officials and some of the shale producers on the sidelines of this big energy conference that's taking place right now. But it doesn't sound like anything can really be done, at least for 12 months, as far as increasing supply.
And internationally, I saw a report where, you know, essentially the administration wanted to meet with the Saudis and with the United Arab Emirates. And they both turned down the meeting.
they wouldn't even pick up the phone. Right, not exactly. Only did they turn it down, they refused to speak.
Right.
Yep. Like the phone rang and someone, hey, it's President Biden. tell them we're busy. It was pretty bad. Okay, and then in addition to that, according to Reuters, the U.S. administration has offered to ease sanction on Venezuela in return. I mean, their oil production facilities are in shambles. I can't see that coming around anytime soon either. Okay, when we come back, I think we got to talk a little bit more. There's a few more energy stories. And then we'll look at some of the leaders in the market today. We'll be right back. This is the Best Stocks Now show. Back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. We are surging today here. That's a good deal. And you know what? The app is back. I couldn't believe it. I got a text yesterday from the co-developer of the app. It's back up and running on the Apple site, the iOS version of the app, the Android version of the app, and the web-based version of the app, beststocksnowapp.com. Everything looks correct. I haven't looked at the target prices yet. I think they got that fixed, too. And you know, look, here, the top 100, Barry, are 95% commodity-related. Okay, this is right. Just upside down from 2020. You got the number one ranked stock is Newmont Mining. You've got uranium stocks, you've got coal stocks, you've got gold stocks, and a whole lot of oil and gas, and steel, and miners. That's your top 100. And as I look at the market today, the leadership is in the commodities. Buenaventura Mining, the fertilizer stocks on fire after a two-day sell-off. You've got CF Industries, Mosaic, Nutrien. You got Cleveland-Cliffs leading the market today. We're back to the same old, despite yesterday's one-day aberration. You've got the coal stocks leading the way. And the oil stocks, the Peabody's and the Vermilions and the Range Resources, etc. And the inverse of funds, you got China 3X just booming higher. You've got SARC, which is opposite ARC, booming higher. You've got the inverse biotechs booming higher, inverse semiconductors exploding higher, and inverse emerging markets. So, you know, inverse the vulnerable areas of the market and long on the ones that benefit from this very unique environment that we are currently in, and apparently getting worse, okay? The environment we're in is not, I don't see any relief in sight, you know, unless they cut a deal with Venezuela. I don't think Venezuela's ready to crank up their production. The Saudis and the United Arab Emirates won't pick up the phone. We've stopped buying Russian oil. And it will take 1 year for U.S. companies to increase production. And the Canadian the pipeline, it could be running 1 year from now. And in the meantime, the elephant in the room is, you know, this goal of getting rid of fossil fuels entirely. The EPA yesterday gives California the authority back to set car emissions rule. They could set it at 100 miles per gallon. It, you know, something. I think they were at 50 or something, and Trump undid it. Now it's back on. California can set their emission standards to anything they want. Taiwan Semiconductor, okay, that's a story out there today. You wonder about Taiwan. I worry about Taiwan. Oh, I was going to talk, too, about Iran. I think that they want to get that done, that nuclear deal, but the oil would be a big part of that deal. And we're dealing against Russia when we're dealing with Iran. And
yeah,
Russia,
they're at the table. They're actually
sitting
at
the table.
Yeah.
How are you going to make? They know that they have us over a barrel. Pardon the pun. They're not going to give in. They're not going to give any. We're bargaining from a very, very weak position. Anytime you're desperate, you know, you're just not in a strong position to be bargaining. And that's why the Saudis won't even listen. The only one coming to the fore and saying, we're here to help, is Canada.
And Devon Energy.
Devon Energy says, we're here to help. The shale guys are here to help in the Bakken and down in the Permian Basin. It's kind of a chilly reception that they've been getting. And so, look, you got to be long the energy stocks. What can I say?
Well, and the bounce yesterday just surprised me because, you know, it was essentially, you know, coming just before an inflation number that we knew was going to be high and that was going to be more reason for interest rates to go up. And, you know, primarily the news of the day was, that there was going to be some kind of, agreement, right, between Russia and Ukraine. And I mean, do we really think rational minds, at least on the Russian side, or, are we putting our, chips on the table for that conflict to end quickly? I mean, we'd all like it to, but I just don't, in all actuality, I just don't see that being a very likely scenario.
Well, there's a lot of scared money that is short, okay? I don't know why, but being short is just way more emotionally difficult than being long a stock, because it just seems like you can get clobbered very quickly. These people that are leveraged big time and short a lot of these little stocks and whatnot, I think any rumor they hear, the emotions, they run and cover those shorts. That was my assessment of what happened yesterday. And now they're back at it again today, it looks like. I don't think Russia would give in until they get everything they want, because they're also bargaining from a strong position, and Ukraine's bargaining from a very weak position.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is, what if they do? Let's just say they decide to go to the table, and Russia decides to agree on something. I mean, I don't really envision all of these sanctions just being turned around, right? Quickly either. So it's not.
No.
So in other words, there's really no fix. Quick fix from a Russian standpoint. So, I'm with you. There's really, they've already kind of, made their bed, right? And they seem to be going to be lying in it for a period of time.
Yeah, the world is not going to take the sanctions off tomorrow if Russia were to all of a sudden create a ceasefire. Okay, right. Amazon, 20-for-1 split. And I remember back in 2000, there was actually a guy that wrote a newsletter, and any time a company would announce a split, which was public knowledge, he'd put out an alert, so-and-so is going to split. And the stock would zoom higher, like, oh boy, I'm going to get twice as many shares. But let's not forget that the price of the stock is cut in half, too, on a 2-for-1 split. And that's what's going to happen. But I think probably you get more investors in Amazon. They're doing a 20-for-1 split, which with a $2,800 stock divided by 20, that's going to take it down to about $140 a share instead of $2,800. It's more of a psychological thing that could help the stock somewhat. But the stock overall, I'm just looking at a chart of Amazon. Oh, it's bouncing today on that news, see? I mean, the theory is more people will buy it at 140 than they would at 2,921. Who wants to own one share? Now you can own 20 shares at the same price. So Amazon is one of the few tech stocks that is bouncing today on that news. But I read yesterday that Amazon is still in the crosshairs of the Federal Trade Commission. Or antitrust, the Department of Justice.
Seems like everybody's coming after them. I think it was an obstruction charge, right? Which is much different than a couple of the others have been named.
Obstruction of justice, that's criminal.
Right.
Well, okay, that's some of the crosshairs, that's some of the turbulence that we have going on in the market. And that's why, I've preached inverse funds for a long, long time. I learned about them many, many years ago. I've used them judiciously along the way. But when you get into a full-blown crisis like we're in now, they're very, very useful. And, you know, they've become a lot more liquid than they were 10 years ago. They were pretty illiquid, especially a lot of the direction funds. I mean, those things trade 7, 8, 9 million shares a day during times like this. But you have to pick on the vulnerable areas of the market. That's my, you know, I give the example of SARC, which is opposite of ARC. And that continues to be. Now, it had a big pop yesterday, ARC funds did, but it's right back at it today going down. And SARC is up 4.7% right now, 4.7%, and closing in on a new 52-week high. SARC has a relative strength of 98, and it's an inverse fund. That just tells you the state of the market right now. Why not make money on that side of the market? All right, when we come back, the chart's jumping off the page today. Welcome back here to the final segment of the Best Stocks Now show with Dow down 262. The 10-year is at 2% right now. The S&P is down 44 points after a 100-point gain yesterday, and the NASDAQ is now down 225. That's a 1.7% loss. So those inverse NASDAQ ETFs doing very well today. Well, okay, let's begin with commodities. As I said, the top 100, throw a dart and you're going to hit a commodity stock more than likely. And of course, there's a lot of commodity ETFs out there. DBC is pretty much a complete commodity ETF. That thing is just soaring. And then, of course, there's commodity mutual funds. What would they be like? Natural resources, probably something along those lines. Basic materials. Fidelity runs several. So does T. Rowe Price. Maybe you have some of those funds available to you. Obviously, gold and silver doing very well, precious metals funds. How about an individual stock? Glencore has been one of the leading commodity stocks for a long, long time. It's out of Switzerland. It's a $94 billion venerable old company, and they are pretty diversified in their commodity offerings. The symbol is GLNCY. Glencore's up 5% today. Look at that, Barry. It's breaking out to a new high today. I think Glencore came out of bankruptcy. I want to say it came out of bankruptcy. It had some issues. And it came out, it was $1 a share in 2015. And now it's $13 per share.
And having five symbols in there, of course, yeah, they probably came out of some type of restructuring, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it's foreign, so it trades on our pink sheet or gray sheet. It trades big volume, though. It's traded 145, pretty big volume. And I'll just say one other thing: it's a big player in nickel. And
yeah,
this nickel story
still playing out. Yeah,
is still playing out. I didn't see the latest.
I read a good bit of it, I think yesterday, day before yesterday. And, yeah, I mean, basically, you're talking about someone who's short, right? Someone who's a Chinese billionaire, apparently, was very short nickel, and then essentially got a margin call and had to cover that nickel, and which means that basically you got to buy a bunch of nickel to cover that short, and the price of nickel, like, literally, you know, doubled, tripled, and no one really knows what the price of nickel is currently because
how many nickels did he lose?
It's not open. Yeah,
no,
right?
They had to shut down the trading.
And I don't think it's opening until, I think at the earliest they said tomorrow. I haven't seen it recently, but I'm like, I mean, this is like 3 days.
Yeah. So. And in the meantime, GLNCY is exploding to new highs. It's ranked in the Best Stocks Now app, which is back up and working. I mean, it's a miracle. We had all of the everything backed up, but not all in one place, you know. We've just been so busy over the years that you just kind of take that for granted. Glencore's ranked number 23 overall out of 6,300, and it pays a dividend of 3.1%. There's a few nickels there. Okay, and then I have to go, man, I'll tell you what. China started attacking their own market a long time ago. It was self-inflicted as Jack Ma. It began with the disappearance of Jack Ma. And it's been all downhill ever since. And, you know, look, the global economy, they depend on a strong global economy. China is a major exporter. And if you've got global demand dropping and you've got this conflict where they're backing Russia in this conflict, maybe they'll see some sanctions. I don't know if anybody has the guts to sanction China, but the inverse China ETFs are just starting to explode to the upside as China continues to break down. Alibaba's lost 60% of its value, I think, since this all began. It's hitting another new 52-week low today. You know, that guy Warren Buffett's, Charlie Munger's been buying it and buying it and buying it. I wouldn't touch a Chinese stock. I got out of them a long time ago. We made money in Alibaba and Tencent.
They're
JD.
Just so volatile. Yeah, just so volatile. I mean, I was looking at couple of our previous favorites, data yesterday was up,
yeah.
You know, showing up 20%. I'm looking at it today, it's down 16%.
I would not touch them.
JD had a good day yesterday, it's down 14% today. Ugh. I mean, it's, regardless of the political uncertainty, right, and just that whole deal. Just the pure volatility is, you know, almost makes it untouchable.
Yeah, Alibaba was as high as 319 before Chairman Xi took a hard left turn, and now it's 92 from
down
319.
Today. Yeah.
Down to 92. So what's the inverse? There's a couple. There's yin and there's yang. Yin is the positive.
yang is the bad one.
Is three times inverse. It's traded 1.6 million shares so far today. It's up 13.1% with a relative strength of 99. FXP is the two times inverse. It's up 8.9. I don't personally like the three times unless I'm really, 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 really bullish or bearish. Having said that, I do own 1 3-times
Position. Or if it's not if it's not a huge position in your portfolio.
Yeah,
you can
make
position
it a little bit.
Size it. Yeah.
You get a lot of bang for your buck. It's like putting in just one of those hot peppers into that stir fry. And
there you go.
Woo! Be careful. Okay, so FXP, and we're out of time. I could do one more, but I don't have time. So there's just the two, Glencore on the long side. And hopefully you're learning something or listening to this show about both sides of the market. Why not take advantage of sometimes which appear to be obvious situations, both on the upside and on the short side? Well, give us a call. We'd be happy to talk to you. 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST or GundersonCapital.com to try out the newsletter. The app is free for the next couple weeks. Download it at the Google Play Store, the Apple Store, or go to BestStocksNowApp.com. It's back. The app is back. And we'll be back tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade.
Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.